This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Welcome to The Drive, everybody. I'm Alan Taylor. My first guest is my friend, Stephen Cole Smith, automotive journalist. He works with Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, and Grassroots Motorsports, and Hagerty Magazine. And let's see, in our second segment of this hour, we're going to talk to Carl Brower, also as a friend of mine who he works with IC Cars and CarExpert.com. He's going to be talking about the longest lasting cars, cars that are most likely to reach 200,000 miles. That'll be at the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, let's start out with Stephen Cole Smith. And Steve, I know you've got a story that really needs some national attention because there's so much bad information, downer information about cops. And I know that you used to be a police officer, and I understand your wife was too. So something happened that needs to be brought to the surface here. So I'd love to have you tell the story.
Yeah, it happened earlier this week in Tampa, which is where we pretty close to where we live. There was a wrong-way driver on Interstate 275, which is one of the main arteries in Tampa, going 100 miles an hour the wrong way on the interstate. And he apparently, there's evidence that he had been drinking heavily. And this cop, his name was Jesse Madsen, a 45-year-old husband and father of three, decorated 7 life-saving awards. He swerved his SUV, which I imagine was probably a Tahoe, into the path of this guy going 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
And they were both killed, but nobody else was killed. But can you imagine going 100 miles an hour in a rental car? The guy had a rental car. If he had head on into a family, they would have been gone too. So this guy gave his life up to save other people. And, you know, it's just such a good example of what these guys do out there on a daily basis that you never hear about.
You're right.
You know, you hear about a lot of the bad things, but this guy, I think he deserves a lot of praise.
No question about it. There is no greater love than one man give his life for another. And there's a place in God's heaven for this man. And what was his name again? Jesse something?
Jesse Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N.
Well, God bless his soul and his family. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
you know, funny. and that.
I just wanted to mention that. I don't want to bring the show down. But
no,
it's up. That's something that's just amazing.
I think it's up because that right there is a testament to an incredible human nature that all of us have. And I was going to say, the average person doesn't think about, well, if somebody was to drive 100 miles in the wrong direction, I'll just block them and give my life. And I don't know that man even thought about it. But at that moment, he thought, my job is to protect everybody else. And if I have to use my life to do it, then so be it. And we hear these heroic stories for our military folks that do this for their teammates. They risk their own life. They throw themselves on a hand grenade, things like that. But it's a beautiful thing, and it really does need a whole hour, but a whole segment at least, to thank this man and his family. And I just tell you that it's a world that we live in that we don't hear enough of this happening because people are so afraid to say the wrong word, let alone, you know, risk their life to do something like that. What a beautiful story.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, this guy had been a U.S. Marine before he became a police officer, so he's given a whole life of service to other people. And that's, I just think it was worth mentioning.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a break. This song is, I've been thinking about you. And so we're thinking about Jesse right now as he's in the arms of our Lord. We'll be right back.
Feels
Don't miss the latest auto news, videos, and real world reviews. Find us online at TheDriveWithAlanTaylor.com.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit HatcherFoundation.org for more information.
Well, you're listening to The Drive all across America and around the world. If you have a story like that, send it to me. Alan, A-L-A-N, Alan at E-R-N for Entertainment Radio Network, ERNLive.com. Alan at ERNLive.com. We need to make sure that we talk about the good in the world, besides the stuff that we love, which in this case with Stephen Cole Smith is the world of motorsports. So, what is going on in your world, Stephen Cole Smith? Thank you for that, by the way.
Drag racing, Alan. It's drag racing. Time for drag racing. This weekend is the opening event for the NHRA, and it's going to be pretty massive, I have a feeling, because John Force and his team are back. They quit last year after one or two races, took the entire rest of the year off. And I talked to John today, you know, the most popular driver there is at 71 years old. I said, why did you take the year off? You know, there were like 10 or 12 events that the NHRA came back with. And he said, because I had contracts with sponsors and I could not deliver what I told the sponsors I would deliver for them. There weren't enough races. There wasn't enough time. There wasn't enough money to go around to pay everybody during all the downtime. So he just took the year off, regrouped, came back at Palm Beach International Raceway last weekend testing. And John Force was the fastest guy there in funny cars. His daughter, Brittany, the one who's married to Graham Rahal and just had a baby, was the fastest in Top Fuel. And his son-in-law, Robert Hyde, was the second fastest in funny car. And I mean, there were guys there, J.R. Todd, Ron Capps. It wasn't like there wasn't some competition.
Right.
But here's a 71-year-old guy topping everybody, and he's coming back this weekend, and I can't wait for it.
That is so awesome. You know what? A lot of the country is starting to open up. In my little town where I live in Oregon, and I travel all around the world. That's why I love having a weekend show. I can do whatever I want Monday through Friday, go all back and forth and up and down, and then I land on the weekend and do my radio show and talk about my life a little bit. And with my friends like yourself, we do this, a lot of the same stuff. But our town is finally opening up. They've dropped the level down to where it's like not extreme danger anymore for the COVID. So restaurants are being able to open, because for a while everybody was like flocking to Florida because they just want to take these damn masks off. But there are people that still also feel more comfortable with the mask on, which is fine. Everybody's got to do what they think is right. And so, but in our little town and a lot of little towns in America, they're starting to open up, I think, as of this weekend, because they're getting this COVID thing under control a little better. And there are also conspiracy theories about the injection or whatever that's called that they're getting. So I don't know. But listen, all I can say is that I think you're right. I think that this NHRA Grand Nationals season opener is going to be big for that reason.
I agree. And I also think I've had my first shot, my first vaccine shot. I've got the second one come up in a couple of weeks, and I had an after effect. It was a swollen lip on the left side, which looked like somebody had punched me. And I had to remember whether or not my wife had punched me or not, and she hadn't that week at all. So it just kind of swelled up one night, and then the next day it was fine. But
wait,
to get the second one.
You mean she normally does kind of punch you every now and then in the face just for kind of like a...
I deserve it. Yeah, I deserve it. I'm not complaining. I deserve it.
Oh my gosh. So
but anyway, the Gator Nationals this weekend will have, this is the first race of the year. Normally it starts at Pomona, but California, you know, is pretty closed up. So they ended the whole show last year at Gainesville and just left the equipment there because it's an NHRA-owned track. Ah. And they're back this weekend, and the weather is going to be gorgeous. Ah. And I don't know how many people they're going to let in. Last year, they let about 50% in, maybe a little more this year. So people just are waiting for something like this to happen. They've been waiting for good weather. It's spring break.
Right.
I think it's going to be a big weekend.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. So let me just for a moment, I have a break coming up here, but how did John Force sound? I mean, he's kind of the godfather of NHRA at this point, wouldn't you say?
He is such a strange guy. He is such a tough interview. I mean, I don't know how many times I heard, what was the question? Because he'll just go on and on and on. And ADD. Basically, back in the day when you had a tape recorder with real tape recorder, you would just turn it on and say, "How are you doing, John?" And then you turn the tape over after 60 minutes. And by the end of it, you still haven't asked a question, but he's answered all of them because he just loves to talk.
Oh, I love it. All right, we'll take a little break. I found a 20-year-old interview I did with Carroll Shelby, and I started listening to it. I think I asked him one question. And it's like, you know, 57 minutes later, I finally asked a second question. You know, that was about, 20 years ago. All right, we'll take a little break. Yeah. Stephen Cole Smith is here with us. Again, you can find him at, Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, Grassroots Motorsports, and Hagerty. We'll be right back. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE-equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Stephen Cole Smith joining us, automotive journalist, motorsports expert, works with Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, Grassroots Motorsports, and Hagerty Magazine. And he is one of my favorite contributors to The Drive. Our show brought to you in part by Auto Tempest, all the cars, one search. So check it out, autotempest.com. Hey, Steve, I know you're driving a Hyundai Venue right now. Can you talk a little bit about this vehicle? Because I noticed last night I was watching TV, and Hyundai has got a sale going on, like zero interest, zero payments for 90 days. And I was like, whenever that happens, like, oh, maybe a good time to go buy a car. And Hyundai's doing a great job, don't you think?
They really are. I mean, there's two things that put Hyundai on the map. One was when the Sonata, and this has been probably 9 years ago, Consumer Reports said that it was the most dependable car there was. And that just blew everybody away. And then what really put Hyundai on the map was that 10-year warranty. Remember the warranty that you could transfer for 10 years for your powertrain?
Yep.
The people weren't really that confident in Hyundais. And they thought if they had a 10-year warranty, how can they lose, especially since it's transferable to the next owner? And I talked to Hyundai dealers about it, and they said, man, other than just little small fixes, it's worked out great for them. So whoever came up with that idea is the one that's most responsible for putting Hyundai where they are, which is amazing given what's in 1986 was when we showed up here. And 89, I went to Korea and went to the Hyundai factory. And even then, in 1989, it was the largest car factory in the world. They were knocking out a million cars a year out of one factory.
Whoo, man. You got to hand it to them because I know we talked during the commercial break a little bit about Hyundai. And I thought, we got to talk about this. When Hyundai first came out, it was the late 80s, wasn't it? Sometime in the late 80s?
Yeah. Yeah. It was about 86.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, okay. So about 80. Wow. You know what? You're right. So in 86, because I bought a wrecking yard in 84. Yes, I owned a wrecking yard. And I saw this brand come out in 86 and I thought, huh, well, there aren't going to be any wrecking yards with Hyundai parts. Hyundai, we called
right.
it. And so I started when I would go to buy my salvage, because that's what it was. We'd go to these salvage pools where the insurance companies bring these smashed up things. And I started buying wrecked Hyundais, right? And they were pretty good little cars. I mean, they you know, considering they were cheap, but I always thought, nah, this car company's not going to make it because, you know, there's too many. There's Hondas and there's Toyotas, and then there's this crazy right. Korean car. But they have come so far that they are now leading the way with some of these. And they have Genesis, which is a Lexus quality or a Mercedes-Benz quality vehicle. So they have really come a long way.
Yeah. They really have. Those original Hyundais were literally Mitsubishi's. They went to Mitsubishi and bought the, they paid for the tooling, you know, they copied the engine. Everything that car was copied from Mitsubishi. And then they started branching out and doing it themselves. And, you know, it's hard to imagine. That is not very long, 1986 to now, to go as far as they have when everybody else has had a lot longer to do it. It's like you said, it's just amazing. And they're getting into motorsports now too, and they're winning left and right in the class of IMSA racing. That's the Michelin Challenge, which is the race that usually runs before the WeatherTech races. So they hired Albert Bierman from BMW. He's responsible for all the M cars. And he's very largely the reason that Hyundai has got such a good sporting manner, because Korea had no racing. They had no racing heritage for people to go back to. So they've had to learn how to do this. And according to Bierman, the people at Hyundai in Korea are just going nuts doing it because it's brand new to them.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that, you know, Hyundai has probably been the shining star of the auto industry as far as growth, owner satisfaction, quality of just about everything they make has been amazing for the last, I'm going to say, 5 to 10 years. And it just keeps getting better right. and better, you know?
So yeah, I think, you know, people ask me, and I'm sure they ask you for recommendations, and I suggest a lot of Hyundais. Like the new Elantra is really nice. The new Tucson's nice.
Yeah.
Going to go drive the Tucson in Tucson here pretty soon because trips are opening back up. You know, our press trips. I've got a trip off for Mitsubishi to Michigan. So we're going to be driving some brand new cars instead of just talking about them.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, have a great weekend at the Gator Nationals, the season opener for the NHRA. And if you see John Force, make sure you get one of those plastic gloves I told you about at McDonald's. Shake his hand with a glove on it. Freaks him out.
I'll do it. I remember that.
That's too funny. All right, Steve. Thank you for being on with us. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Alan. Thank you, man.
Yep. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Carl Brower. He is got a story from iccars.com. Longest lasting cars. He says this study is looking at the cars most likely to reach 200,000 miles, and it's going to shock you what they were. I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive, and we'll be right back with a little bit more. Stay with us.
Hey, brother. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the Brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
This This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Our show is brought to you in part by Subaru and the new Subaru Outback. Go where love takes you, Subaru. So I got to tell you a story because Carl Brower, my buddy's on the line here now, automotive industry analyst. He's a contributor to Forbes. He is a juror and board member of the North American Car and Truck of the Year. And he's working also with IC Cars and CarExpert.com. But IC Cars is doing a story on the longest lasting cars. And Carl, before you tell the story, because Subaru is a sponsor, I should tell you that at a certain point in my life, I bought a wrecking yard. I was 24 years old. I think you know that, right?
Yeah, you told me that.
Right. So when I was 24, I bought a wrecking yard, and it was import cars. And I, about that time, that was 1984, it was full of cars, classic cars. But the guy had pushed all the classic cars to the back, and he was starting to do some more import cars. But along the way, I had always been kind of a Subaru guy. I loved the Subaru Brat. Remember the Brat with the little seats in the back, right? And
that was very creative, creative design.
I know, right? Like, you never get away with that today in the world today. But
No.
The one thing is, the years went on, I started working with buying Subarus, a lot of them, because people really loved their Subarus and they kept them alive. And at a certain point, a guy came in and he goes, I want one of those six-cylinder engines, you know, and he just wanted the engine that they put in the, I think it's like in the Tribeca, and it was in, you know, some other different models at the time. And I said, why do you want the six-cylinder? What are you going to do with it? He says, I'm going to put it in an experimental aircraft I'm building. The engines are so reliable that we put them in aircraft. This is the boxer-style opposing cylinder engine and six cylinders. Yep. And I thought to myself, isn't that interesting? Because, yeah, you can't pull over to a cloud and work on your engine, right? So you're going to do a story here on the longest-lasting cars from iccars.com. And as we know, the other joke that we used to say, which was Toyota's, why do they even put a hood latch on them? They're so reliable. This was, of course, back when cars were not nearly as reliable as they are today. So I'm very curious to see where you're going to go with this, because there's got to be some sort of a big study that is going to show what has been the most reliable. So what do you got?
Yeah, and it's funny you talk about Toyota and cars in general, right? Because what we did is we looked at the percentage of cars that got to 200,000 or more miles.
Right.
And to get there, unless you've got some kind of crazy, you know, fleet vehicle that's being driven, you know, like 1,000 miles a day by some crazy use, that takes a while. So most of the cars on this list are generally pretty older, you know, nameplates. Like, you're not going to see, I don't know, a Mustang Mach-E on here, right? The new Telluride, the Kia Telluride ain't going to be on here because it hasn't been around long enough for any of them to get to 200,000 miles.
Right.
So you got to go pretty far back, and you're back in the era where you're talking about, where to go back as far as it takes to get to a lot of 200,000 mile cars, the cars weren't as reliable. You're talking typically, you know, 10, 15, 20 years old. And the top car on here is the Toyota Land Cruiser. And what's really impressive about it is that its percentage of the cars that are over 200,000 and the Land Cruiser is 16.3%. Now, just so you know, the average model that it can get to over 200,000 miles, the average percentage that's done it is 1%. 1% of most nameplates on average have vehicles, you know, make model nameplates, have vehicles that have gotten to 200 plus thousand miles. This has got 16.3, 16 times more likely that a Land Cruiser will get to over 200,000 miles than the average car. And the second place car is the Toyota Sequoia. Now, that's interesting also, again, because the Land Cruiser has been around forever.
Right.
So you think, well, there's plenty of those that could get to 200,000. They've been making them for like 40 years. Yeah, well, the Sequoia they've not made for 40 years. That's a much later introduced model, and it's 11.2%.
Wow.
So over 11 times as likely for a Sequoia to get to over 200,000 miles than the average model name out there. So those are your first two cars on the list, and they really
amazing.
Are at a separate level. The number three is Suburban, and it's 5.1%. So it's less than a third less than a third of what the Land Cruiser is at for the Suburban.
You know, and think about it, Carl, the Land Cruiser and the Sequoia and the Suburban, but I think really the two Toyotas, gas-sucking pigs, both of them.
Yeah.
The Suburban actually gets pretty good fuel economy considering it's bigger than both those vehicles, you know?
Well, also interesting is that you've been off and on for years. I think you get diesel versions. Well, actually, on the heavy-duty ones, I'm not sure how many diesels they've sold to the light-duty. And this did not include heavy-duty trucks because that got a whole other level of parameters. And
right.
Even more of those get to it, as you can imagine. But certainly the Land Cruiser and the Sequoia, there are no diesel versions. They're getting to 200,000-plus miles with normal internal combustion engine designs.
Yeah, getting 13 miles to the gallon, where the Suburban, you may get 18, 20 miles to the gallon. The new ones even get better than that. I tell you what, I went to Texas one time, where, as you know, Texas is huge. And I went to go buy a Honda Accord at an auction. I was walking. The first thing is you walk around a car and you go, wow, this thing looks nice. Whoever owned it took good care of it, because you can just look at it and see. Walked around it. And I thought, well, we're in Texas. This was my first trip to Texas to buy cars many years ago. And I'm going to say it was like a 93 Honda Accord LX, okay? So this is, you know, quite a few years ago. I walked around it. I got inside the car. It had a tan leather interior. It wasn't worn out. Very nice. And I'm like, wow. I looked down in the odometer, and it had 560,000 miles on it. Half a million miles. And I thought, how did they do this? This car looks immaculate. And, of course, you know, half a million miles. Somebody was on the road every day, probably delivering from, you know, Lubbock to, you know, wherever. You know what I'm saying? And they just piled them.
Yep.
But it's not unusual. Remember the guy from Volvo that put 2 million miles on his Volvo P1800? 2 million.
Yeah.
So it can be done. And maintenance is the key to all this.
Right.
So crazy. All right. What else on that list? I'm curious.
Sure. Then number four is the Ford Expedition at 4.9% of those. So you got 5.1% Suburban Ford Expedition.
Oh.
And then the Toyota 4Runner's 4.1 and the Avalon, the only
car
sedan.
Yeah.
Well, actually this, the sedan Avalon is number six. And the 4Runner is number five.
Wow. Okay, so this story is at iccars.com. And I'm amazed, though, because you just rattled off a whole bunch of gas-sucking pigs out there. You should figure out what it takes to drive 13 miles to the gallon or 12 or 11 average and go 200,000 miles. They could have bought a house for as much as they spent on fuel. You know? Don't go anywhere, Carl. We'll come back and talk more about this stuff. Talking with Carl Brower, and this is The Drive all across America and around the world. Thanks to our radio stations hearing our show. Thanks to you for listening. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us. There were drums in the air
as she started to dance. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
When you think Subaru, you think love. The 2021 Subaru Outback will make you fall in love with its state-of-the-art safety features, a spacious and comfortable interior, and convenient amenities, all ready for any adventure. Standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, plus up to 33 miles per gallon, 8.7 inches of ground clearance, X-mode with hill descent control, and a direct-injected turbocharged Subaru boxer engine will make you love every adventure in your Outback. Love, it's what makes Subaru, Subaru. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for 2021 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Turbocharged engine, 11.6 inch touchscreen available on select models.
Well, you're listening to The Drive all across America. Thanks for hanging with us. Carl Brower joining us was just talking about this study from iccars.com, and that's I, the letter I, S-E-E, cars.com, about the longest-lasting cars that have reached over 200,000 miles. And I mean to tell you, it's like, people, if you're driving that many miles in these big old gas hogs, for the savings of the fuel economy, if you bought something that was more fuel efficient, you can buy a brand new, nicer car. If you're driving 11, 12, 13 miles to the gallon, and you can drive one that gets 20 miles to the gallon, 22, 23 miles to the gallon, do the math. Do yourself a favor. And especially as the price of gas keeps creeping back up now, you can save a huge amount. I mean, almost a car payment amount on that vehicle driving that much. That's crazy stuff. But anyway, all right, can we just shift gears a little bit? That story, iccars.com. The Jeep Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer. I know that it seems to me like the embargo should be just about up. What can you tell us about it?
So, you know, it's the return of the Jeep Wagoneer, which, of course, is a very storied name that goes way back. Anyone who's been a fan of Jeeps for any length of time knows about these vehicles. I think most of us probably picture a lot of wood grain when we hear Wagoneer.
Oh, I had one. Loved it.
Yeah, they were very commonly, you know, just slathered in wood grain cladding all up and down them. But now we've got all new versions coming for 2022. And these things are looking pretty cool, Alan. I mean, you know, a 5.7 liter base engine with 392 horsepower and 404 pounds of torque, and that's the base engine.
Yeah.
Or you can get a 6.4 liter V8 with 471 horsepower and 455 pound feet of torque.
Oh.
So we're talking serious performance here, serious capability, and of course, pretty serious pricing too on these things. You know, these are not going to be inexpensive vehicles. I don't know if you heard the starting prices. Right?
Well, we've heard that they're going to cost as much fully loaded as $100,000. But now this is not a, this is going to be the biggest Jeep they've made since they made the original Wagoneer, I think, right? Maybe even bigger than that.
Right. It's a three row vehicle. It's very premium oriented. Even the Wagoneer is the base, quote unquote, one. And, you know, it's still going to be quite pricey. And then when you go to the Grand Wagoneer, you get even more luxurious one, but not that the base one, quote unquote, base Wagoneer is not already chock full of, well, that powerful base V8 engine and a lot of features.
So what was the starting price? Were they saying?
So the starting price is like right at, I believe, $70,000, like $68,000. I'm actually on the site right now trying to confirm this.
Wow. Yeah. No, I've heard. It's like everybody's like, what? But again, people, imagine something that is much bigger than what your brain is telling you, because we're used to Jeeps being the Jeep brand being a small vehicle brand, you know, or smaller vehicle. And all of a sudden, here comes this full size. Seven or eight passenger three row Jeep that is going to compete with, I think it's got to be competing at least with a Tahoe, maybe even a Suburban type size vehicle. Because I haven't seen one in person, but I'm looking at pictures, you know.
I would argue, Alan, that it's actually going more after like the premium German vehicles.
You think? Come on.
I think they're trying to position this thing. The size, you know, it's got the giant like 10 or 12 inch display inside.
Right.
It's going to have crazy, you know, interior materials in terms of leather and stuff. Of course, it's going to have crazy off-road capabilities. But I think the materials inside and out are trying to compete with premium brands from Europe.
So when you say something like that, to me, the biggest one of these European premium off-road, you know, off-roadable vehicles like this is going to be either the full-size Range Rover or the Audi Q7. And I think this is at least as big as the Audi Q7 and maybe as big as a Tahoe. What do you think? I mean, because until you stand next to one, you can't really tell. Yeah, I guess you could take a tape measure and measure it. They probably give you the measurements at this point.
Yeah, and you can get the measurements, but I think you are absolutely right. I think it's going to be size-wise, it's going to be, you know, at the same or larger size than those three row German or you know the Land Rovers.
Right. Well,
you
even know, even maybe what do you think giant. About a Land Cruiser, a current model Land Cruiser that big? Maybe not as tall. Well, you know,
I think that's a good one. I think a Land Cruiser would be a good comparison. You know, and maybe you're right. Maybe not quite as upright. I think they want a lower center of gravity for more confident handling, but they've also got a bunch of crazy suspension stuff that'll do. So I think it can be lower. But with the modern tech that you don't see on the Land Cruisers, they haven't really updated those for a while.
Yep.
It can be lower and still have crazy clearance for off-roading.
Well, I wonder, too, if you look at even we talked a little bit about Range Rover, some of these other vehicles also have the air suspension where you can actually jack it up. But you only do that when you're going off-road, you know, because you want to have a little higher clearance. Otherwise, it becomes a little bit more unstable. All right, we're going to finish talking about this and then head off into the private custom car world of Carl Brower been actually working on a classic car, which a lot of times we just talk about it. When you actually start working on it, it changes your whole mind. Putting your hands on the car and tools and sanding the paper. Sanding the car with sandpaper. It's scary. Carl just did it. We'll be talking about it. Be right back. Stay with us. Black bandana, sweet Louisiana.
Robbing on a bank in the state of Indiana. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Our show brought to you in part by Dodge. And don't forget, they have some really, really good deals right now. Visit your Dodge dealer. Take one of these things for a test drive. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't been in a Dodge or any one of these performance machines in a while, drive that and see if it doesn't just, as the old car guys say, turn your crank. Carl Brower joining us. I bet you haven't heard that one in a while, right?
I'm getting emails from Dodge, and they're killing me. You know, they just sent me their like maximum, you know, off you can get on a Hellcat or a Hellcat Redeye.
I know.
And they had an extra amount they threw in for me because they know me and they know I've already spent a bunch of money with them. And they right. Oh, we love you. So on top of this, you get this off more. It's like, stop that. Okay. Yeah. I'm out of garage space. My wife does not want another big 700 plus horsepower car sitting around the house here. And right. At that kind of price off, I'm going to go down and I'm going to get one. So stop that. Yeah. Stop telling me about this.
Exactly. There are some really good deals. Right now is a really good time to buy any vehicle. And the deals, the interest rates are phenomenal. You can get a lot of 0% things. And just, yeah, if you're thinking about even thinking about driving your car 200,000 miles, go buy a new one.
Yeah.
You know, that gas savings will pay you.
Okay.
You know, anyway. All right. So back real quick, wrapping up on the Wagoneer and the Grand Wagoneer from Jeep. It'll be a 2022. You said the base model is going to come with almost 400 horsepower with a 5.7 liter V8 Hemi. And the Grand Wagoneer with a 471 horsepower, almost 500 horsepower, which let me just tell you,
there's
just something beautiful about that. And I still think that we were talking about the fuel economy stuff. If you don't drive like me and Carl do, which is mean smashing the gas pedal down all the time, these things don't get bad fuel economy. It's when there's a loose nut behind the wheel and every time you take away from a stoplight, you smash your foot on the gas pedal and you just have to go. You know I'm like that. I know Carl like that. If you drive like a normal person, you know.
And it's not just that. It's the capability. Just let me just rattle off a few things here in literally like 10 seconds. Crawl ratio 48 to 1. Up to 24 inches of water fording and a quadrilift air suspension with 10 inches of ground clearance.
See,
and
I knew
best
it.
In class towing capacity of 10,000 pounds. Alan, it can tow up to 10,000 pounds.
Scare me to death. You know, the amazing thing is then you have to go, all right, so you can tow 10,000 pounds because the drivetrain is so amazing. No question about it. Absolutely amazing. Well, how many speed transmission does it have?
This has got that 8-speed, which I love, by the way. You know, you got 9 and 10-speed transmissions out there. Anyone who's been around any of these recent Mopar products and stuff, that 8-speed transmission, it's like the Goldilocks, okay? It's just a right on how many gears. It's not hunting for gears, and it's getting great gas mileage and delivering a smooth stream of power from low to high speed.
All right, so back to you have 8 speeds in the transmission. When we used to be happy having a 4-speed, 4 on the floor, right? Now we've got 8s and 10-speeds, right? But in this case, the question is the loose nut behind the wheel, the person driving, able to handle 10,000 pounds? So the capability of the car sometimes will outdo the capability of the person being able to handle that much weight. So I would say to people, you know, I mean, yeah, you can do it, But maybe you're better off with your friends dually if you're going to go pull 10,000 pounds, if you know what I mean. Because I've pulled 10,000 pounds. That's a lot of weight, you know?
Yeah, so that's a lot. I when I saw that figure, I was like, and this isn't even like a heavy-duty truck or anything. That's crazy.
Right.
One more figure for you.
Okay.
1,375-watt premium audio system with 23 speakers, including a 12-inch subwoofer.
Yeah, nice.
So if you're it's a Macintosh, industry-first Macintosh audio system in the car.
That's beautiful. Well, if you've ever priced out a Macintosh, you can spend 25, 30, 40, 50 on your house, you know, just in your entertainment room. That's absurd. Okay.
Yep.
Real quickly, give me 1 minute. I know the Firebird, just to let everybody know, he bought it. Was it 77 Firebird?
88.
Whatever. 88, 77. I knew it was a couple of numbers. Anyway, the point is, you were doing a smog test on it, and the smog test place wrecked his perfect original paint job car inside their shop. He got a new hood.
Yeah.
Are you telling me you actually sanded this thing down with your daughter, by the way? I think is great. I didn't know you did that kind of work, Carl.
I don't do that kind of work. This is my first time. And the only reason I did it is it's like, you know what? It's not a Concours Pebble Beach car. Let's give this a shot. Let's all learn. And it'll be a bonding experience with the daughter. And everything went exactly as I imagined. We bonded. We learned. And the hood doesn't look particularly great. But
you know what?
It's just a flat black. And it looks fine.
I love it that you did that, because your daughter, she knows she can do anything because of you, Carl. So that's what we give our kids when we dare to do things we've never done before. Carl Brower, you can find out his stories from this last show here at iccars.com or carexpert.com. Thank you, Carl.
Hey, great talking to you, Alan. Take care.
We got another hour to go right here on The Drive. From the rain under the carnival tent. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track, as well as drivers like you and me on the street, for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE-equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto News. Exclusive interviews. Real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, a brand new world we're in, but some things stay the same. That means that we talk about cars on this show. This is an automotive enthusiast and lifestyle type show where we talk about test drives and things, like, kind of like an automotive magazine with some of the people that write for magazines. And although some people say magazines, they still make those things. George Kennedy III, a digital guy, he is, the co-founder of Cartender. He also works with Car Gurus, Boston Globe and U.S. News and World Report and others. And test driving a few cars today, George, are you?
Yeah, I'm always test driving new stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say about a month. It's been about a month since they brought the last car to me. Of course, holidays and all that, and I'm kind of good with it. But it's really weird. When you're driving all these brand new cars, like my wife's got a 2021 Nissan Rogue, which has got ProPilot Assist, which is kind of, you know, it's not really self-driving, but the word assist. It's
semi-autonomous.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got lane departure warning systems, and it's got crash mitigation this and crash mitigation, cross traffic control, this and that. And, you know, it's like, you actually get lazy, because then I jump in. I bought a 2012 Raptor, Ford Raptor F-150, and it doesn't have, and I love it. It doesn't have a lot of these things on it. And so I actually am being very, very careful when I drive it, because you get kind of lazy when you have these cars that will almost drive for you, and they won't let you back into something, and they just won't let you do things wrong or by mistake, by accident.
I think trucks make you pay attention more too.
Yeah.
You know, think about how wide that Raptor is too. You know, I remember being in the Silverado 1500, which has like lane departure warning. Well,
right.
The vehicle that wide, it's going off all the time. You get a lot of false positives, or you're always bouncing up against it. You feel like you're playing operation, you know?
Yep. I kind of miss old school driving, which is really strange to say.
All right. If you are a Rush fan at all, there's a song called Red Barchetta that is based on like a 1970s road and track fictional short story.
Really?
About a dude who, like, in the future, goes and finds his like grandfather's farm and digs up this little like Italian sports car, and he gets on the road. But remind you, this was written in the 70s. All the cars in the future have all these safety features, so people just like are totally like tuned out. And so he's like driving for his life, trying to avoid all these cars where like the drivers are just on mental autopilot.
Right. Well, that's where we are. Mental autopilot. But the new cars today, they really are amazing. And I know you're driving a Hyundai Sonata Hybrid, which I actually like. Right. I like hybrid vehicles. That is the one thing that I think is kind of the best of what has come out of the new technology is the ability to have the electrification as a hybrid, to where you can use the engine and kind of have a normal vehicle so you don't have range anxiety. But that first little bit, you know, if you're just going to go down to the store and get a gallon of milk, you can run down there just about on electricity, which no matter what, even some trucks, they'll do enough miles to take you to the store and back. So I think it's a smart thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting, you know, at one point when you said hybrid, you know, maybe 10 years in the past, you would think Prius, right? Or sort of this dedicated hybrid model
Toyota, where everything
is sacrificed in the name of fuel economy. Well, you know, the automakers have come along, the technology has come along to the point where the car, it's not as invasive. It's totally seamless. And I, you know, probably 5-10 years from now, when you go in and you buy a Toyota Camry, there's not going to just be either one of two things. Either A, the hybrid is going to be the standard powertrain, right? And maybe you have the option of fully electric, or, oh, you can get the plug-in. But, you know, it's going to be so ingrained now that the hybrid is going to be the standard powertrain. And I'm fine with that because it is minimally invasive. And honestly, for the most part, for most drivers, if you weren't told that this is a hybrid, you wouldn't know, except for all the gains you're getting when it comes to fuel economy.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back. So if you guys are in the market for a hybrid vehicle, Hyundai makes some really amazing vehicles. So we'll talk about the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. George Kennedy III joining us. This is The Drive. We thank our sponsors. And like Brembo, the choice of champions. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the Brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Well, I'm talking to George Kennedy III, and he is driving a Hyundai Sonata, which I think you can buy these at Costco, through Costco anyway. You know, I mean, that's the funny thing these days when you go to Costco, by the way, George, and there's cars out front. The other day, I was amazed to see a Jeep Gladiator. And, you know, there's always something new out in front of Costco with the super duper, super califragilistic price on it. And, I mean, it honestly is an option for a lot of people. They, you know, Costco has good prices. So can you buy
a
Hyundai?
Was there a table in front of it with free samples and they were just little matchboxes of the Gladiator?
No. There was nobody there. That's the funny thing. But I think the idea is you go inside and say, I want to buy that Jeep out front. I don't even know, honestly. But Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. I did see I think it was a 2021 Hyundai Sonata out there, which is a good looking car. But maybe you give us some highlights about this car you're driving.
Yeah, so I mean, the Sonata and the Sonata Hybrid are pretty darn similar. I mean, when you break it down, it's really the powertrain is your biggest difference. And you know, we're getting in the mid 40s.
Wow.
And that was kind of stepping on it. So the EPA for that's 45 city, 47 combined, and 51 on the highway, which is just, for something that you don't have to sacrifice in terms of, back seat space or whatever, that's pretty great. You know, I didn't love the Sonata styling when it first came out, but it's grown on me.
I know.
I thought it had a bit of catfish.
I feel exactly the same way. At first, I kind of looked at it and scrunched my eyeball and my nose, and I was like, what? And then I walked around it, and it kind of looks like an Audi A7, I think.
That's becoming a new trend among the sedans, the mid-size sedan with the Honda Accord as well. They're going for that coupe-like styling.
Right.
I think that also affords you more rear seat headroom. But here's the thing. 10 years ago, we as journalists were saying, all sedans are way too boring. You guys got to step it up. And then they respond to that, and then you get a bunch of people being like, well, I don't like the way that looks, right? So we should commend them for pushing the envelope on a segment where it's kind of losing ground to SUVs. And so they're doing things to try and keep the sedan segment relevant. And it's great being in a car like this, outside of the hybrid powertrain of a sedan, right? You kind of forget how great these things drive because we're always in SUVs. We're always in trucks. And there's a great reason to own a sedan, right? You get plenty of rear seat space. There's trunk space. You can fold the seats down when you need it. They drive really great on the highway. You kind of forget how great sedans sort of can corner on the highway, and they sort of soak up bumps in the road. Just really great all-around driving conditions.
I just looked at a Hyundai, Audi A7, and it does kind of look like this. They have a similar design. It seems to me like even the designer that used to work for Audi works at Hyundai, maybe. I don't know. They look very similar.
Well, I know that Peter Schreier was a designer for Audi and went to work for Kia.
Oh, that's what it was. Kia. Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so there is, and you can see a little bit of that early 2000s Audi in their styling DNA. They've kind of moved away from that, but over the past decade, you can kind of see, if you know what you're looking for, kind of see that Audi styling sprinkled in.
Yeah. I mean, it has a kind of a sport back kind of a thing going on, but I'll tell you what, if I didn't have my glasses on, I would have said, hey, look at that Audi.
Right.
And that's a compliment to Hyundai, by the way. Good looking cars, both.
Yeah, I mean, in the strong suit is absolutely the cabin. You can be on one side of the fence or the other when it comes to the exterior styling. The cabin of this car is terrific. It is the right blend of form and function. And when I talk about that, I mean, it's got the tech, it's got the big touchscreen up in the center console, but unlike, say a Volvo, it's not totally dependent on the touchscreen. There are redundant controls for climate and the stereo. There is no tuning dial for the stereo, which I kind of don't like. I love how, if you get into a Jeep, you've got the touchscreen, but you've also got these big knobs for the volume and the tuning, as well as the climate controls below it. So
can this be
redundant controls, but as far as this goes, they did a really good job sort of packaging everything, and it really looks sharp.
Can this be right that these are $25,000? I just went online, and actually on Car Gurus, it popped up $25,925. So no, I'm not talking about the hybrid, but what was the price of the one you drove? Because that seems...
Yeah, sure. So, there are three tiers for the Sonata Hybrid. The blue is sort of the minimalist fuel-sipping king, and that starts at 27.
Okay, hold it.
Yep.
So I was right. The standard ones are, in the low 20s. We're going to take a break because I don't get run over by a commercial. George Kennedy talking about Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. So much car for the money. Amazing warranty, good looks, quality. We'll take a break. It is The Drive.
When you think Subaru, you think love. The 2021 Subaru Outback gives you state-of-the-art active safety technology for extra confidence on every drive. You can count on the roomy comfort and impressive cargo space, standard raised roof rails with enhanced tie-down points, and Subaru Starlink Multimedia with an 11.6-inch high-resolution touchscreen to wrap your experience with love for your Outback. Love, it's what makes Subaru, Subaru. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for 2021 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Turbocharged engine, 11.6-inch touchscreen available on select models.
To The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we're talking with George Kennedy III, Cartender. He's the co-founder there. He's also a freelance automotive journalist, works for Car Gurus, Boston Globe, and U.S. News and World Report, and others. And he contributes to this show. Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. Now, the Hyundai Sonata starts in the low to mid-20s, which is amazing. But I'm sure as you start adding on hybrid and options and start saying the word limited or platinum or any of those kind of things, you can add quite a pretty penny to that, George. So we started, you said, roughly around 27, you were saying, on this car?
Yeah, and that's for the blue trim. So that's sort of their optimized fuel economy one. So it's got special wheels and tires. It's like little things to optimize fuel economy. Next up from there is the SEL, which starts at 29.9, and then we drove the Limited, which came in at 35. So, you know, that's more than the 20s, but that's still not bad for a car that has, you know, everything. Even the SEL and the Blue, they come with Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. All three levels come with plenty of driver assistance features. So all that safety tech that people are looking for these days, I think they're great values, even at 29, even at 35.
Right. No, I can't disagree, because I was looking for cars there with my wife, and she literally made me drive, you know, everything in the world with her. And it was actually a really good experience for me, because I usually will go, all right, well, I've been wanting one of these for a while. Let's go look at those. All right, I'll take the yellow one, or I'll take the black one, or whatever it is. But, you know, I'm different because I'm a car guy, so I change my cars like I change my underwear. Once a month.
I was going to say, yeah, not a lot, right?
Anyway.
Well, okay. You are right, though, in that, you know, the average consumer doesn't look at buying and selling cars the way that we do sometimes. If you're an automotive enthusiast, or you're a car guy or girl, you are holding out and waiting. You're like, oh, my God, this is like, that's the Mustang that I want with the special, special package. Whereas other people might look at it more from a commodity standpoint and say, look, I here's my budget. I'm looking for a three-row crossover with these features. So I think it's good for us to hardwire into that process every once in a while, because more often than not, we're being asked for advice on that type of purchase, right? Not the, hey, can you find me this like limited edition Camaro?
Yep. So here's what's funny as I'm thinking about this. That car has a very nice look. Obviously, it's much bigger than it was when it first was born, the Sonata. Hyundai Sonata Hybrid, value. And if you bought a 10-year-old Mercedes of the same, you know, if you were looking for this size of a car, that car would have been $60,000-$70,000. And today you can get the quality of a 10-year-old Mercedes in a Hyundai. Now, can we talk about Mercedes for a minute? Let's change gears, because I know you just drove the GLA 250, which is the smallest SUV Mercedes makes. And my guess would have been that this little GLA 250 Mercedes-Benz would have been like $50,000. But I bet I'm wrong, because even Mercedes is going, all right, we got to make some entry-level machines that people want. Can you give us the beginning price on this little SUV?
Yeah, so here's the funny thing. You know, we just said that the Hyundai Sonata Limited was 35 and change.
Right.
This, the GLA 250, starts at 36.
Yeah.
36.3.
Right.
36.2.
So it's funny because, you know, I mean, that's a Mercedes-Benz. You're getting a lot of German engineering and technology, and you're getting a lot of car. You're getting the cachet of being able to drive a Mercedes-Benz, and you know, there's a certain feeling that goes along with that, because some people get their feelings from, you know, the clothes that they wear, the brands that they wear. You know, for me, it was like, oh, I was an Eddie Bauer guy, you know, because an outdoorsman, you know, or, you know, one of those outdoor brands. But the brand is important to some people. They buy brand. Now, with a SUV brand new for Mercedes-Benz at 36,000 bucks. How was it?
So, you know, it's their smallest subcompact SUV. I think it's important to note that the first generation of the GLA was based on an Infiniti Q30.
Right.
And I just remember that car kind of being a letdown. It felt slow. The interior felt kind of chintzy. It was crammed. This is a huge improvement. This is spacious. You sit a little bit more upright.
Wait a minute. And you're just
finally get out of its own way.
To let people know, George is 6'3". He's a big guy. So for him to say spacious, I'm surprised, really.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, it's got 221 horsepower, more importantly, 258 pound-feet of torque. So that's pretty crucial for getting up to speed on the highway. It handles really well around town and on the highway. I think it's a great car for long trips. What you'll notice is it's got that kind of new interior look that you'll see in many new Mercedes, with the one single panel, digital panel that goes from a digital instrument panel to a center touchscreen. And that's the new MBUX infotainment system. So it's got CarPlay, Android Auto, but it's also got like a very intuitive way to swipe through the different major, you know, features that you would be using. There's also a little, you know, touch dial thing down in the center console. These can usually be kind of wonky, but in Mercedes, they're getting the packaging right. So in terms of a upscale daily driver, somebody's first entry into Mercedes, I think it's a fantastic vehicle and a huge improvement from where the GLA was before.
All right, hang tight. I want to take a little break here. I'll give you one more little segment on this car because I kind of want to talk about technology and when a vehicle has too much technology. And so don't answer me now, but you know, some of these high-end cars, sometimes they pack too much in there and it becomes intimidating for people. We'll take a little break. We're talking to George Kennedy. You can find him at Car Gurus, Boston Globe, U.S. News and World Report. He does videos and writes stories. He's also a co-founder of Car Tender, and he's a contributor to this show. Thank you, George. We're going to be right back with more on The Drive. Stay with us. She held him up, and he held up for ransom in a bar. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
So I'm talking to George Kennedy III. He's driving a Mercedes-Benz GLA 250. We just talked about a Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. And these things are packed full of technology. But I happen to know that George is a more of a, I'm going to say, a classic car guy when it comes to his own personal machine. He's an off-road guy. He drives an older Jeep. What is it? Cherokee, right?
99 Cherokee. That's right.
99. Zero technology. I mean, it's amazing. It's got power steering. But, you know, it's funny because when you get out of those cars and you go back into your yestertech mobile, I guess we'll say.
I like that yestertech. Okay. Right?
And, you know, then you have to be that much more alert. Is it me, George, or do you have the same thing where you go, oh, my God, I almost changed lanes and I forgot that, you know, I wasn't paying attention for a second. Somebody's calling me or God knows what. I'm eating a cheeseburger and a fry dropped on the ground. And, you know, I want to, you know, it's like these new cars will keep you from making a mistake. So is that good or is it making us lazy when we're not in these miracle machines that will save your life because these other ones won't do it? So what is too much technology? Have we reached that point or is it going to make our old cars obsolete? That's the scary part for me. What do you think?
Well, yeah. So I look at this stuff as an aid, not a crutch. And I know that's not everybody, but I consider myself to be a pretty alert driver. I'm from Boston. People think we're jerk drivers. I just say we're deliberate and we actually pay attention and we signal when we change lanes. All right.
Okay.
Even if I'm cutting you off, I will signal first.
That's awesome.
All right.
Okay.
And that's all I'd ask from other people too on the road. Just signal and so much will be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
But when I use like the blind spot system, I'm not, you know, I'm using it as a way to make sure the lane's clear, not as a buzz that like I'm not, you know, I shouldn't be where I am. So you need to stay alert as if you didn't have the technology. It's going to be tough as younger drivers start to, you know, this will be their first car.
Yeah.
Cars with features like this, right? So it's how do you train them? And I think the best way to do that is start them with a car that doesn't. I know, you know, my little sister is just getting her license. She's 16, and my parents want to put her in a 08 Honda Accord that they're just getting out of or planning to get out of. And that doesn't have any of these features. So she's going to have to learn how to do it on her own. But there's still talk of, oh, you know, we could actually retroactively put a backup camera in, which I think that would actually be a sensible blend of old and new.
Mm-hmm. Aftermarket, you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
you know, it's funny
there's ways of doing that. You can put a there's a license plate frame that can Bluetooth hook up to your cell phone.
Right.
You know, there's ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. No, there is. There's plenty of ways to do it. You can get the rear view mirror that, you know, the camera shows up in the rear view mirror aftermarket as well. They do that for a lot of motorhomes and things like that that did not.
I think I find those pictures to be too small. So it might be so small that you might not even notice the obstruction. My brother has a 2013 Jeep Wrangler, you know, we're a Jeep family.
Right.
And I got him for Christmas an aftermarket head unit that has, you know, Apple CarPlay, but it also came with a backup camera that he can fit into the center cap of the spare tire on the back.
Nice.
And that'll broadcast to his head unit.
No, it's great. I am just, you know, concerned that it's dumbing down the driver, and the driver doesn't always have the luxury of these new cars. And then all of a sudden, my feeling is that less people are getting killed on the road today because of the new safety and stuff like that. I get that, and thank God for that. But I think that there could be also a point where people start getting overly used to it, because I felt it a few times myself, and I'm guilty. I'm charging myself guilty right now, that when I get back in my Yestertech mobiles, I forget for a moment. I look down, and because I'm used to the car, you know, the steering wheel vibrating or whatever's going to happen, because every car is different. But the other thing is, I bought a brand new tractor because I have 3.5 acres, and I want to, you know, like be Farmer John, you know. And I got on my tractor the other day, and I felt like, well, this stupid thing, you know, it doesn't have any of these. It doesn't have anything. It doesn't even have, you know, like nothing. It's a tractor. But, you know, and then I start hearing about from the Consumer Electronics Show that they're making electric tractors now. And then I started thinking.
That would put you in internal strife.
Oh, my gosh. Right. But then I started thinking about it. And I go, no, that's really smart, because, see, if I own a ranch and my ranch is mapped out, I can send the tractor out there to plow the field with nobody in it. Self-driving electric tractor. See, I get that. I mean,
there are ways that the tech is great. Like, there's stupid little things. For example, in like Subarus, they have a feature in their EyeSight program by which if you are at a stoplight and the car in front of you moves away, but you haven't moved, it'll give you a little beep. Right. So like, so if you're staring down at your phone, it's thinking about how people really interact with these cars.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, we can try and program, you know, stupidity out of people, but we can also provide little ways to work around that. Right.
Yeah.
So someone's staring down at their phone, the car ahead of them moves, it gives them a little beep and they take off. So they're not sitting there holding up the rest of the line.
Right. Now, again, like I said, you know, the Consumer Electronics Show, of course, it didn't happen this year. It happened, you know, digitally, you might say, over the internet. But there was, you know, Cadillac unveiled a flying car. And, you know, there's a lot of technology. You know, the electric tractors are two companies. I think John Deere was there and Caterpillar was there. I get it. But I feel like that, you know, what is driver's ed going to be like? Because some schools don't even have
right.
it. I mean, will it be taught
this brings it full circle. I just looked at it. The short story was called A Nice Morning Drive in the November 73 issue of Road and Track. So 1973, and they're talking about what you and I are talking about right now. You know, drivers tuning out because of the tech.
Oh, this is the song called Red Barchetta. Is that what it is? Barchetta? Red Barchetta?
Red Barchetta.
Okay,
yeah.
Barchetta.
So it's based on A Nice Morning Drive, November 73 issue of Road and Track. I think it was written by Richard Foster. So it's like, you know, if you ever want to sort of take a look back at what people thought about that and how people are still trying to figure out how to coexist with sort of that evolution in technology.
Yeah. George, I'm going to do this one more time. I want one more segment with you. I'm going to just steal some more of your time because
of course.
Nissan has now decided to build kind of a pod from work at home. And it's a concept thing, but I want to talk about, you know, it's like the world is changing. We're going to have to change with it. Stay with us, you guys. It's George Kennedy III joining us here. Car Gurus, Boston Globe, U.S. News and World Report. And this is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
Well, this is The Drive all across America and around the world because of the interwebs. And our show is brought to you in part by Subaru. And, you know, Subaru, we were talking, George Kennedy's on the line here, we were talking about some of the state-of-the-art safety, like the standard EyeSight driver assist technology, also Subaru driver focus distraction mitigation system means crash protection for every passenger. It's a great thing, but we're also talking about how do we as human beings not be lulled into a sense of, you know, the car will take care of me, because we still are responsible for motivating that machine down the road. And George, I appreciate your workaday Joe attitude. You're not a corporate dude. You're a car guy. And so I appreciate you, you know, taking some time to talk about this stuff. So what do you think about that? I mean, driver's ed. I mean, did you have driver's ed at your high school by any chance?
We didn't have it at high school. It was after school. There were a couple of companies in our hometown that did it. I do know that today the rate of kids who are driver eligible that are going to driver's ed is going down.
Yeah.
Maybe because my brother and I have Jeeps and we do fun stuff with cars. My sister was chomping at the bit to go into driver's ed. But, you know, there are people that are people living in New York who have been working there for 10 years that don't have a driver's license.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, and a friend of mine didn't get his driver's license until he was 38 years old because he lived in the city in Manhattan. And he's like, what do I need a driver's license for, you know?
And I wonder if there's sort of been like a, you know, a diaspora of people bouncing out of New York, going to different parts of the country.
Yeah, they're lost now.
You know, they have to get a driver's license, right? There's no Metro card in Des Moines. I don't think there is.
Well, you know, a friend of mine was talking about he did I don't know. Maybe he was drunk and I saw him. He was doing a little thing where he was talking to his phone, like a FaceTime thing. And he asked the question, you know, where does this enthusiast gene come from? Because you have it. Your brother has it. You guys infected your sister. I mean, we live in a world of pandemic and viruses right now. But how do we infect other people with this enthusiast, this automotive enthusiast bug that makes people want to shift gears with a manual transmission? Listen, I bought a 95 BMW. I was thinking maybe it was a 2005, but no, or maybe it is. I don't even know what year it is now, but I bought it because it was a 5-speed. It's in my garage. I went, oh, that's a 5-speed. Oh, my gosh, those are rare. And I went down and my wife goes, why'd you buy that? I go, because it's a manual transmission. You can't even find those
anymore.
Because
it's a manual.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what do we do about this?
My sister even wants to learn how to drive manual. Not only does she want her license as soon as possible, but she wants to learn how to drive stick. So it's funny. My brother and I, our parents, not car people, right? My brother and I, we were into planes first. At least I was. And I feel like a lot of automotive enthusiasts also have, like, they're either into planes or trains, like just cool industrial stuff. And so if you appreciate the mechanical aspect of things, then you might have an appreciation for why is this car a CVT? Why is it a manual? Why is this a hybrid? Why is it not? Right.
Right, right.
And like, for me, when it comes to racing, you know, I'm intrigued by the technologies that come out of racing as much as I am the actual pieces of motorsport. Like, you know, I'm really into F1 and, you know, sports car racing and rally racing. I'm more interested in the innovations that come out of those sports, especially for if a team cheated or something, how did they get away with it? Or why did they, like, if some engineer came up with something really clever that was able to dupe the marshals for a season,
right,
that's neat to me.
Yeah. You know, I just realized it's a 2005 BMW 328. I had to think about it for a minute. And 2005 is a convertible too. White with a black top, tan leather interior. I bought it for six grand. It's got 100,000 miles on it, but I thought manual transmission, really clean, nice little car, 2005. It's new enough that it's got all the good, you know, kind of safety technology that I want, and not too much of it, because I personally, even though I get it, I understand it, I appreciate it, I don't personally want all of this, you know, all of this stuff that is available today. I kind of want some sort of a place in the middle. And that BMW had it. And my wife kept saying, you know, why? And I'm like, manual transmission, it's new enough. It's not one of the old ones, because they're all kind of manual transmission, BMW driver machine, right? But it's new enough.
Also that drive machine, yeah.
Right. I feel like that it's going to hold its value. I can have some fun with it. I can keep shifting gears because I love shifting. And so then, you know, my son, he says, hey, I need to buy a car for my girlfriend. You know, she's going to buy it, but he wants to help her find a car. And he goes, what do you want for that BMW? I go, it's got a manual transmission. He goes, oh, no, that won't work. That won't work. Like, what?
Did he ask what that was?
What? No, he knows, because his first car was a BMW, and I made sure of that, but nice, with a manual transmission. It was a 1976, right, 2002, you know, BMW, an old one. But she didn't want a manual transmission. And so, you know, to me, that was sad, because it's becoming a lost art. And I know there's kind of a whole movement about save the stick and all that.
Save the manuals. Yeah.
Hold on. I want to take one more segment with you. You're going to get a whole freaking hour. That's a very rare thing in my world these days, you know. This is good conversation that needs to happen in this crazy new world that happened earlier this week. New president, the whole nine yards. We're going to take a break. You're listening to The Drive all across America and around the world. We appreciate you listening. Appreciate our sponsors. And love cars. If you love cars too, you're on the right spot on the dial. We'll be right back. Don't carry me too far away.
Oh, big old jet and a line. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
And I'm talking to George Kennedy III, who in the commercial break tells me, you know what's weird? I actually just wrote a story about this for U.S. News and World Report. That is just too bizarre, man. It's, you know,
serendipity, man.
It's the hive mind. It's the car guy hive mind. You know, we all think alike. Well, so tell us about it then. Manual transmissions. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're less and less of them every year. And, you know, before, there's a whole like save the manuals movement. And when you think about it, it makes sense as to why they're going away. You know, back in the day, the manual was the more fuel efficient option. You either got, you know, 4 or 5 speed. You were able to sort of milk each gear and really get better fuel economy. But as CVTs have improved and as automatics have gone 8, 9, 10 speed automatic transmissions,
right,
and more, they're the more efficient transmissions. So you think about CAFE regulations, fuel economy regulations, combined with the fact that if you're a car company and you're making hundreds of thousands of cars a year, the money you can save just offering one transmission on the assembly line means that, you know, if unless you have a demand from your consumer
right.
for the manual, it just makes more sense for you to offer one transmission, save the money on the assembly line, and then, you know, rake in all your money, I guess.
Well, it's interesting because I remember when I was 18 years old and I had become already a hardcore automotive enthusiast from the time I got my driver's license when I was 16. I started buying and selling and buying and fixing up and working on cars. And then I started painting cars while I was still in high school. And then I'm painting all my friends' cars. And then I'm fixing up cars and I'm watching Hot Rod Magazine and Motor Trend and all these different magazines. And I bought a 240Z and I put some flares on it. And then I put a V8 engine under the hood. And, you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, who does that when they're 18? You know what I mean? I guess a lot of us. But at a certain point, I thought, you know, I want to go and I want to learn how to drive and like be kind of like a professional, you know, sports car driver and go to these little slalom courses. And so at the fairgrounds in Ventura, California, where I grew up, they had a little slalom course set up, a Gymkhana course, they called it. And so I wanted to buy something that I thought would just be so much fun. You know what I bought, George? I bought an Austin Healey Bug-Eyed Sprite.
Awesome.
You know, right? You can pick up the whole back end by yourself, you know? And I went there a couple times, and I mean to tell you, it was, I don't know, I remember the last time I had that much fun was when I was, I think I was about 5 years old, and my mom and dad told me to stop sucking my thumb, and I told them, no, this is my thumb. I'm going to suck it all I want. I love sucking my thumb. Anyway, they made me stop, of course, but I, you know, it's just so much fun. It was natural fun. It was by myself fun. There was skill. There was pressure. There was, you know, everything, excitement. And it was just a dumb little aluminum car that was just a piece of garbage, but I had so much fun. And I think that's going away for so many young people these days. Cars are so complicated.
What's interesting is that, you know, there's that line from Le Mans, the Steve McQueen movie. It's like racing is everything. Everything before and after is just waiting. And what's funny is, you know, that line seems a little dramatic until you're out there on a track
right. And
you start to like get into it. And then once you're done with that track day, everything else is just kind of white noise for another like 48 hours until you reacclimate to normal pace of life.
Right.
And I remember doing I was lucky enough to do the Skip Barber open wheel program. That was absolutely wild.
Oh, and yeah.
I felt that way after the next several days, you're almost like you're like postpartum depression of like not being on the racetrack.
But do you know why? And I'll say this as we end the show here, and I'm going to play Queen, Another One Bites the Dust, because with manual transmissions, you know, but I think that there is a higher consciousness that you have to slip into, like a meditative state. The president of Porsche, I asked him, I said, "You're the president of Porsche." I go, "What do you do to clear your head? It's obviously not going to drive a Porsche because, you know, that's your company." He goes, "No." He goes, "I fly." And I thought to myself, brilliant. The only thing more dangerous than, you know, doing racing around is flying, right? And so,
right.
But I think that there is a consciousness in there that it is like there's a natural high to it. So anyway, automatic transmissions are taking over. It's kind of sad. But go ahead. Last thought.
Well, I'd say, you know, you mentioned Porsche. They're one of the brands that's still committed to manuals. It's Subaru.
Barely.
It's Volkswagen, Toyota.
Right.
Porsche, too. You know, you can get a manual on a Cayman, a Boxster, and the 911 Carrera S. So,
right. By the way,
there is hope for the future for manuals, and it's enthusiast cars.
Where can people find the story you wrote? U.S. News and World Report online? Where?
That's right, yeah. U.S. News and World Report and my review for the GLA will be on cargurus.com.
Okay, very good. George Kennedy III, my car buddy. That's about it for this week for us here on The Drive. Thank you, George.
You bet, man.
All right, you guys go out, be safe, have fun, love cars, love your neighbor. See you next week.
When you
think Subaru, you think love. The 2021 Subaru Outback will make you fall in love with its state-of-the-art safety features, a spacious and comfortable interior, and convenient amenities, all ready for any adventure. Standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, plus up to 33 miles per gallon, 8.7 inches of ground clearance, X-Mode with hill descent control, and a direct-injected turbocharged Subaru Boxer engine will make you love every adventure in your Outback. Love, it's what makes Subaru, Subaru. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for 2021 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Turbocharged engine and 11.6-inch touchscreen available on select models.